Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The game, we are live tonight, First Horizon Park. The Nashville Sounds taking on the Columbus Clippers, 7 o'clock. Again, great seats still available. Fan Appreciation Weekend, $5 and $6 beers, nationalsounds.com for tickets. And, yeah, we're excited to be here. Our streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, presented by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. And it's kind of weird. Because I can't see. I've got Zoom up here, but I can't see Joe.
Joe's in there.
Oh, there's Joe.
There he is.
There's Joe. Howie, Joe in his home office hanging out with us. Joe Retro joins us because it is time for Jared versus Joe.
Jared Stillman versus Joe Rexroad. Now on Stillman & Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
All right, Caroline, ball's in your court. After last weekend's abomination. Last week's abomination.
I explained to you very clearly why I thought Joe won last week. Because it is, and I think that Sunday proved us correct, that it is absolutely an abomination to say that the Titans regret acquiring Julio Jones.
Yes.
Well, you gave it to him on the Vanderbilt thing.
What do you mean the Vanderbilt thing? That our first week?
Oh, was that the first? I can't keep up anymore.
Yeah, the L's keep piling up, Jared. They keep piling up.
You can't keep track of the losses.
Is this really the fourth week of us doing this?
Or maybe this is week three?
I think this is the third. Yeah.
I think this is. Yeah, Joe currently leads 2-1. The Vanderbilt thing I stand by.
This is the third week.
Yeah. No, this is the fourth week, yes.
This is the fourth week.
Is it?
Yeah, because you won 1, Joe won 2.
Okay, fine. All right. I'm cheating over here. All right. Start us off.
Joe, I want you to start. Make a case for or against currently where we stand in this week or in this season. Only use this season as a sample size. Derek Carr is a top 10 quarterback in the league.
Oh, no. I mean, I think that's an easy one. Thank you for letting me go first on this one. I mean, if you're arguing he is top 10, I think the case is, you know, I think what you hear a lot of times people say, yeah, you know what, player X, I think he's a top 10 quarterback. And then it's like, okay, so let's start listing the names. I mean, you go through Mahomes and Rodgers and Brady and down the list. And personally, I would hope anyone who watches Ryan Tannehill on a regular basis would have him ahead of Derek Carr. I do think Derek Carr has been playing well this year, and he's a good story, but I can't imagine he's in the top 12 in this league.
So I'm going to actually answer the question that was asked. I think right now, if you were to say after 2 weeks, who's the league MVP, it's a three-way race with Derek Carr, Kyler Murray, and Tom Brady. And I just, you know, quarterbacks, to me, quarterback wins is a quarterback stat. I watched the Monday night game. He tore it up. You want to blame the Ravens not having Marcus Peters? That's fine. It's a two-week season. You asked just this year alone. I think right now you're looking at, again, after 2 weeks, the MVP race to me, those three guys. And I don't think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback this year. But do I think he is a top 10 quarterback for 2 weeks of this season? Then the answer is yes.
That is fair, because I do think that any of this Raiders and Derek Carr praise is so much a product of recency bias.
Well, I think it's September football, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, you got to calm down in September. You can't watch a game and say, oh, Tennessee is better than Seattle because they went to Seattle and they beat the Seahawks. I don't want to go to Seattle anymore if I'm the Titans, because, like, you won a fluky, weird, kind of crazy game, and maybe you win it again if you don't do the dumb stuff you did. But I try not to get too worked up or bent out of shape. I don't think the Steelers are better than Buffalo. I don't think that, you know, the Raiders are going to be better than the Ravens, but it's just September football.
Next one, Jared, I'll let you go first. And this is a hypothetical situation, but I want to kind of look at Derrick Henry's role on the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
Derrick Henry goes down on Sunday, knock on all the wood, goes down on Sunday, and the Titans lose him for the rest of the season. The Titans still win the AFC South, true or false?
That will depend on the health of Carson Wentz. So if Carson Wentz continues to get hurt, then the Titans may win the division at 9-8. But I just don't think that this team, if they had a tight end and if they had a better defense, I think they could survive losing Derrick Henry, you know, and still make it to the playoffs. But the reality is, I keep using the comparison, he's the Michael Jordan of the Titans. Tannehill is the Scottie Pippen. And we saw when the Bulls had to rely on Scottie Pippen, they made it to the playoffs the first year, and they really struggled the second year until Michael Jordan came back. Tannehill has had, you know, the opportunity in his career, granted with Adam Gase as his coach, where he was supposed to be the alpha. I think it's much better with Henry as the guy. I think this team is totally built around Henry. I think he's the leader of the team now, clearly and vocally the leader of this team. And I don't think you can take an MVP candidate in this league off of any team and expect them to be playoff caliber.
I agree with Jared, but I will start a sub-argument here on the Michael Jordan comparison. Because, look, if Derrick Henry were to be off this team, I would say if we could see Darrington Evans healthy and he was actually – okay, fine. You can – well, then, okay, then have Jeremy McNichols then, Jared. Okay, how about that? Would you rather see Darrington Evans or Jeremy McNichols?
Yeah, but this team doesn't have a chance if Darrington Evans is out there.
Right. My point being, that would be the only thing. If somehow he is what they thought they drafted and he somehow magically gets healthy, maybe I feel a little better about their chances. But they would be 9-8, 8-9 kind of team. But the problem with the Michael Jordan argument with Derrick Henry, he is absolutely the best player on the team. He's certainly the best player relative to his position in the NFL. But again, even Sunday, it's still just a nice highlight from Derrick Henry. If Ryan Tannehill isn't amazing in the final drive and really throughout the day, it's still the most important position. It's hard to say this guy at a less important position is Michael Jordan. Here's Pippen at the position that really dictates whether you win or lose more than any other by far. That's the problem with your analogy.
Pippen was, and I'll say this, Pippen, his role at times, now Jordan was the most important player on the Bulls, but Pippen was essentially the point guard. He was the best defensive player. He led the team in steals and rebounds. I mean, they couldn't do this without Scottie Pippen, just like the Titans couldn't have won Sunday without Ryan Tannehill. But Michael Jordan, at the end of the game, the guy that gets you through it is Michael. And here, the guy that gets you through it time and time again is Derrick Henry.
Yeah, but again, the problem is plenty of basketball teams have a better player that's not at the point guard position who can be their quote-unquote Michael Jordan. In football, you better have a great quarterback. You're not going to be very good if you don't.
Basketball Joe.
Basketball
Joe. I trust Joe on his basketball team more than you. I do have
to
say.
He's a basketball Benny, that's
I do have to say.
Practice starts this week. Joe, your thoughts on basketball?
Very excited. I don't want to go off on a tangent.
By the way, I was shocked, Joe, that the Coaches versus Cancer Classic, the Tennessee Coaches versus – I was shocked you weren't there. I was all with all of your buddies. Belmont's coach, Lipscomb's coach, Austin Peay's coach,
Rick Barnes, Jerry Stackhouse.
You can say their names. You're allowed to say their names, Jared.
I can't remember all their names, Joe.
Belmont's coach.
They were exposed.
They were all there. Casey was there. I mean, it was, and I was like, and I was sitting there at the event, and I was like, where's Joe? All of his buddies in one place. This is like Joe Retro Media Day. How you weren't there, I was surprised.
Was that the day I was traveling back from Seattle? I don't know. What was that, Monday?
I am not your traveling secretary.
That was Monday. To answer your question, Joe, that was
Thank
Monday.
You. All right. Sorry, man.
I would like to add that Sean Henry says that he tunes in just for the segment to see you two get along. Whatever you would call that, what is happening right now. If you want to call that get along, sure, why not? Next one. Alabama, after narrowly escaping the Florida game with a win, Alabama's stance in the SEC West, their dominance in college football could potentially be in jeopardy later on in the season.
Who goes first?
Who went first last time?
I did.
Joe goes first.
Okay. Could potentially, like, do I feel less like certain that they're going to steamroll everyone? Yes. I don't know how anybody couldn't feel differently about it. We've kind of seen Miami's been exposed a little bit here too. That opening win looks less impressive, but it's still an overreaction to say Alabama's not going to be the best team. Alabama's not going to win at all. Alabama could absolutely win this whole sucker, and I won't bat an eyelash if they do. I was a bit stunned by what I saw from Florida. I was stunned to see Florida just run it on them and stop them running. They have not run it well. I mean, even with a garbage game in there, the yards per carry is stunningly low for Alabama this year. So there are concerns, very young at quarterback and receiver. Some injuries on D have really hurt them. But, I mean, I am not for a second doubting that they could run this table still and ultimately be ready for a game against Georgia and Atlanta and win that game.
So I'm going to say it like this. I think Alabama, if you had to say, okay, rank the SEC, Alabama would still be ranked number one for me. Mm-hmm. But, I'm not sure after what I saw that they're going to be able to get out of that SEC West unscathed because – Ole Miss can put up a bunch of points, and Ole Miss can put up points better, in my opinion, than Florida can with Emory Jones. And that makes me worry about that game. I think Auburn showed, you know, a little bit of a backbone against Penn State this week, even though they didn't win. I thought that that was a very tough game for Auburn, and I was a little surprised by their defense. Here's the thing that gets me about Alabama. And, like, you know, A&M is a top 10 team right now, and then they'd have to play Georgia in the SEC title game. Here's the thing that gets me about Alabama. When's the last time Nick Saban's had a team that wasn't great on defense and couldn't run the ball? I mean, they could not run the ball on Saturday, and they could not stop the run on Saturday. I mean, Florida could have told them, hey, we're running it up the middle here. And I was like, I am stunned that a Nick Saban team would look like that. And then not only that, what really got me with Saban was that moment of truth up by five in the fourth quarter on a fourth and short around the goal line. And Saban brought the offense back out on the field. And if the right tackle doesn't jump, he's going for it on fourth down. And I'm like, wait a minute. Nick Saban, the reason you would go for it in that situation is if you don't trust your defense. And so for a Nick Saban to not trust his defense against a Florida team that we didn't think was an offensive juggernaut is shocking to me as far as Alabama's concerned. Trevor Maddich said he'd rank them fifth right now in the country. I wouldn't go that far. But I don't think Alabama is as dominant as we're used to Alabama being.
Their defenses haven't been great in a while, Jared. Last year, Ole Miss scored like 100 points on them. They have not had a great defense in a few years. I thought this was going to be a great defensive Alabama team for the first time in a while. May yet be, but they haven't been very good on D. Now, they've run the ball, but that's two different things.
But to not trust his defense out there on the field?
I don't think
you got to react to what you're looking at from the sideline.
I'm just saying, that is, to me, Nick Saban. I think Nick Saban has always believed in putting the defense out on the field.
Well, I think that Nick Saban has always put his team in a position to be up by 28 points to where he doesn't have to rely on his defense in order to win a game.
I don't know. I was on a radio show in Louisville this morning, and we were talking about this, and they were like, I think Saban doesn't worry about running the ball anymore because Saban wants to chuck it all over the yard. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. These old football guys do not just change who they are. Like, you're never going to see Andy Reid say, hey, let's play great defense out there. Now, he may have a good defense some year and win with defense, but you're never going to see, like, a coach who's an offensive coach all of a sudden become a defensive guy. And I don't think you're going to see Saban. And Joe's right. I mean, their defense has allowed more, but their defense is pretty stout last year, too. But I do not think you're ever going to see Nick Saban not feel comfortable running the ball and be okay with that, or not feel comfortable with putting his defense on the field, which I didn't think he was comfortable with Saturday.
Next one, Tennessee. Well, the 2022 SEC schedule came out yesterday. We saw that Tennessee will now play Akron instead of Army, and we learned that Tennessee paid Army $500,000 in order to get out of that game.
For the troops.
Joe, you go first. Is that a smart move on Tennessee's part to at least make a bowl game because Army was a big threat, or is that a weak move?
Well, look, I think it's both, but I'll shade towards smart. And it, you know, look, it's not just that Army's good and you could lose that game. That is such a killer game to schedule. I would never schedule a triple option team ever, ever, ever. Not only do you, especially if you don't have one in your league, because, you know, like Georgia Tech has been one. So in the ACC, maybe it's not the same thing because you kind of have that as part of your repertoire and you kind of, okay, here's the triple option week. It is awful. It's so different than anything else you do on defense. It's a huge danger to lose that game. And also, they cut block you all day long. They cut and cut and cut. And I've never seen a team play a triple option team and not come away with like at least four or five defensive injuries. It's a terrible scheduling idea. So to me, it's Danny White doing something smart more than it is weak. Look, if people want to complain about it, that's fine. But let's also be realistic about where Tennessee is.
My take on it is I don't care who you schedule in the non-conference, you better win. And I guess, like, this is going to sound crazy, but my only issue with this is I just don't like a public institution paying $500,000 to get out of a football game. Like, I know that that's sad, like, not that I'm Mr. Moral here, but I'm with Joe. Like, to go out there and try to play a triple option team and you're not used to doing it, you're setting yourself up to fail. Plus, Army is a good program. I do think it would be more fun to watch a Tennessee Army game as a fan. And I do think Tennessee should be able to beat Army. So I'm not sure I would have gotten out of the game. But I guess the only real problem I have with this, I understand why Danny White and Josh Heupel are doing it. Mm-hmm. I understand why they don't want to play in that game. Okay. But I just have a hard time with a public university that takes public money, like our tax dollars go to the public university.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Jerry,
are you kidding
me? That's
what you get out of this?
But no, but like 500 grand to, because you're afraid to play Army?
The football program prints money.
This 500 grand.
That is a drop in the bucket.
Jared, this money is not public money. The athletic department's for public university. It's not, Jared. They have to eat. They have to kill what they eat. This is money they've raised. Yes, they are public employees. We can see their salaries. But the athletic department money that they're using to do this is not coming from taxpayers. This is a huge misperception out there from people. And here you are again. That's just not how it works, man.
No. Because you got to abide by Title IX. You got to – everything's got to be opened up. I mean, you can't
right,
tell
but you still have a separate budget. But you still have a separate budget. Now, the private university, that may not be the same, but that doesn't matter, of course. These Power Five public universities, that's why it's set up this way, because they do all these ridiculously frivolous things. You think 500 – I mean, they spend $500,000 for, like, boosters that have mint juleps on the bowl trip, man. I mean, this is nothing. I mean, they spend money. It's outrageous, the spending. Well, but again
– I don't like the penny pitching of the university that made up a reason to fire their football coach, spending $500,000 to not have to play Army. Just go ahead and play them. Just play them. Is it the end of the world if you play them?
No, and that's where I'm at, but for completely different reasons. I think the money is like such a non-factor here. Well, I mean, that is a drop in the bucket of that football program's budget.
I care about frugal, you know, I care about wise spending. Remember when one of us said, don't give Jeremy Pruitt a contract extension? I remember when
okay,
one of us said
that.
Okay,
that is a totally separate deal here.
Would have saved you enough money to buy out Army 18 times over.
And everyone else was like, oh, great move. Paying
Check
Pruitt.
Twitter. Yeah. Check Twitter, Joseph.
Check it.
You guys were like, oh, yeah, Pruitt, he's the best. That way he won't go replace Saban at Alabama. I said, hey, I didn't say Pruitt was doing a bad job. I just said, hey, you know, he's doing an okay job. Just let him keep coaching. And then
you're
he
the guy,
proved that he was no
good. You're the guy who, quote, unquote, found receipts from something that was a completely, completely different conversation from what you claimed it was.
I did not.
Don't even start.
First of all, it's
hard to doctor the truth, Joe.
Tapes are tapes.
No. Guys, Caroline, you know. I explained this clearly.
I know, and I hear you. I know
what
you meant.
She heard the tape, too. She hears you now, and she heard the tape then.
I know what you meant, but I heard the tape.
No, but see, Jared has tried to say that conversation took place after Clowney was hurt and lost the year.
Oh, that's not true.
Well, that's the whole problem here.
Clowney, that audio was from, like, October 28th of last year.
Okay.
That's before Clowney got hurt.
Clowney's.
You know how bad their Jared, as bad as it was, as bad as he was. Do you know what the alternatives were?
No, Clowney's last game. What had to be like November?
It was like November
3rd.
First week of November.
Okay, so it was right then that he'd say he'd do the same thing over.
How could I not have seen the future?
It was like October 28th.
But he got hurt November 3rd.
Yes.
So I should have seen the future, Jared. That's silly,
okay.
Jared. If I break my ankle tomorrow, you should have told me, well, you should have worn different shoes.
I think Clowney had already missed games for being hurt or had missed a game for already being hurt. I mean, I stand by this. Floyd laughed at it.
Tua's out for being hurt, but...
And I didn't want to, and I was nervous about drafting Tua because he gets hurt.
But do you think that the Dolphins are just going to drop Tua because he's hurt?
It sounds like it sounds like the Dolphins don't love Tua.
Do not twist this to support your narrative.
Here you go, here you go, here you go. Clowney played on, he missed a game.
He wasn't done for the year. That's it. It doesn't matter. He wasn't. You have tried to say that I said after it was all said and done, oh, I'd still go back and do it. Of course I didn't say that.
No. My point was that when Clowney was proving that he was completely ineffective, you still said that you would make the move again.
Okay, but that's not how you said it. Now you are twisting it.
Well, you need to go find those receipts and pull them out.
Hey, you know what receipt I need to find is the day that you on the air said, why would they go sign Clowney? They just signed a guy to get sacks. His name's Vic Beasley.
They did.
That's the receipt I need to find.
There we go. That's a good one, Joe.
But I don't deny
Ian,
that.
Ian, help me, Ian. Help me, Ian.
I'm not denying what you just said. You're saying, hey, you need to go find it because you said that. I'm saying I said it. I said that they didn't need to sign Clowney.
You should feel shame for saying it. You should continue to feel shame for saying that.
The reason that I said they didn't, now that was part of it, but the reason I said they didn't need to sign Clowney is because he doesn't get sacks. He didn't. He always gets hurt. He did. We questioned his effort, which we found out. He admitted, you know, I could have come back, but I just decided to go to free agency. That's why I said don't do it. I went on TV on News 2 the day they signed him, a Corey Curtis, and I said I wouldn't have done it. And everybody got mad. Everybody got mad.
That's
and I just need
fine.
To hear you say that I was right about that.
No, look, I've told you, you were right to question at the time. I'm still saying that at the time, with the information I had, looking at my roster, I'm John Robinson, I'm doing it.
Right, and that was
at
dumb.
The time.
And fine. That was dumb.
But we disagree. Okay, that's fine. But just remember, Clowney was a freaking like LT compared to Beasley last year.
No, he was not.
Which is sad. Oh, hell yeah,
he was not.
Oh, he
no,
sure
he
was
not.
Let's see.
Clowney was not. He was
Vic
not
Beasley,
Lawrence Taylor.
A pylon absolutely makes more impact than Vic Beasley.
And Clowney made the same impact as Beasley. Nothing.
He didn't do anything. Look, Clowney was it was not good. He did not earn the money. It turned out to be bad, but it's still miles apart. Vic Beasley's got to be the worst sign I've ever seen.
I didn't even see the difference, though, is I didn't like sit there and say before they signed Beasley, you know who they need to go get? Vic Beasley. This team needs Vic. I didn't say that.
No, but that was your reasoning.
They signed him. We called the defensive coordinator from the Falcons when Beasley had 16 sacks. God, what's his name? Richard Smith. There you go. We called Richard Smith, who Floyd was the best man at his wedding. We called him. He said, yeah, you know, like he'll get off the ball and he can go sack a quarterback. Can't do anything else. But, you know, he had a good attitude when I was there in Atlanta. We took Richard at his word. So I'm like, okay, this guy's brought in here to do that. I did not know that Beasley was off the reservation. And it wasn't as obvious as it was with Clowney. But I knew when they signed Beasley, there was a chance it wasn't going to work out. I didn't say that the defense was fixed because they got Beasley. I'm just saying I would have put him in position when I paid him $9.5 million to go play football. And
you said there
you
was no
like,
need to get Clowney.
And there was no need to get Clowney because Clowney doesn't
there
get
was.
Sacks.
There was
because
a need
Clowney
for Clowney
doesn't
to come in
stay
and be
healthy.
Good.
And
there was
Clowney
a need for someone
hard.
Else to come in and get sacks. Was
and
Clowney
that's fine.
The person?
That's fine.
No.
But it wasn't Clowney. That's fine. There was always a need to get somebody else. But it wasn't Clowney because he doesn't get sacks. And you were like, you know what? Maybe he would have gotten sacks.
Maybe he would have.
How many sacks he got this year?
Can't say for sure.
I don't know.
I think he, like third in the NFL in pressures? But that doesn't matter to Jared. Sacks
it does
are
not.
All that matters.
You know why it doesn't matter to me?
Sacks are all
because Pro Football Focus said the same stupid crap about Bud Dupree yesterday about, you know, Bud Dupree's only got three pressures. Bud Dupree looks terrible. Bud Dupree. I'll tell you this. I watch the games. I could tell Bud Dupree's out there. Like, I could tell Sunday. I could tell Bud Dupree was out there and made a difference. And D'Amico Autry's out there and makes a difference. So you can take your Pro Football Focus stats that aren't real stats and you can shove them up the keister because I don't care what Pro Football Focus says. I care about actual, like, getting to the quarterback. And Bud hasn't done it
yet. You and Glennon need to have a debate. That's what needs to happen.
All right. I'm done with you two now. We have time for one more?
One more.
Okay. I'm going to switch gears to a little Preds. Thought. Jared, you go first. Best possible move the Preds could make, not re-signing Philip Forsberg this year.
I mean, I don't think it's the best move they could make, and then the question would have to be, like, what do they get in return? Mm-hmm. But if they don't make any move, So, like, if they don't trade him and they don't sign him, then they're just, then that's ridiculous. And then at that point, like, if we get to a point in the year, like, after the trade deadline, if he's on this team and doesn't have a contract extension, David Poile should be fired. Like, and again, you can't get mad at something, at somebody for something they haven't done. But I think that they're afraid to make the move on trading Forsberg because as much as they can use buzzwords like competitive rebuild, that totally all goes right out the window the second you do that, and everyone knows that it is a true full-on rebuild. I just think Forsberg's going to want so much money, and he's going to want a no-trade provision, and he's not going to be afraid to test the market, that the Predators are going to find themselves in a situation where it's, do you want to overpay and give out things you don't want to give out to a guy who is not a high-end scoring forward, or do you want to start your full rebuild and not your competitive rebuild? And I don't like the situation they're in, but they have to do something as far as he's concerned.
Joe. You're like Tom Cruise. You're like Tom Cruise, like the pre-crime division. Like you're moving to the future and firing Poile for something that you think he might do. I like that, Jared. Like very forward thinking. Look, they need to sign him. He is their best forward. They need to sign him. Certainly. I can't imagine if they can't get it done during this year, after all that has transpired, I can't imagine that they would not move him at the deadline. That would be,
would you give him $9 million a year at a no movement clause though?
No.
Cause that's probably what it's going to take.
Yeah. I think that number's high, but especially the no movement clause. And obviously we know David Poile does not like to give those out. He has started to do that a little bit though. Which is, you know, not ideal, but it's still to me an absolute priority to get him signed. If you can make it happen. And I think a lot of that really comes down to Forsberg, one, what he thinks about the next few years. Like, does he actually think that something can, you know, come emerge competitive? And I think that's the primary, you know, issue, but it is a priority. I don't think you can look at this and say, you know what? Move on. We can get something for him. That is, agree with Jared. That's the full rebuild. That's what they're trying to avoid. I think you have to do everything you can to sign him, but you also have to draw a line. And look, if Forsberg goes to the market, he will be overpaid. This is how it works. It really comes down to whether he believes in the direction of things here.
So I think the reality is, after the way you traded Ryan Ellis, I'm not sure that you can get any of these guys to sign without no movement clauses. Because you already gave one to Yossi. They've shipped off Arvidsson. They've shipped off Ellis. They're trying to get rid of Duchesne. They're trying to get rid of Johansson. And those guys know it. And so I think they're going to say, hey, look, if you're not going to give me what I can get on the market where I would be overpaid, then you got to give me a no-movement clause. And I think those are going to be non-starters. So you're either going to overpay or a no-movement clause, or they're going to want you to overpay and a no-movement clause. And I just can't see the Predators doing that. I can't see the Predators re-signing Forsberg in a way in which he ultimately lives up to what it's going to cost to sign him. And that bothers me. But that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Are we ready to tally up?
Tally it up.
So you two actually agreed more than I thought you would today. I think that
I feel dirty.
I feels not right. This feels very sacrilegious. But you did agree a lot more than I thought you would. I'm with you on the Alabama thing. They're still not fifth on my list in the national.
I didn't say they were.
No, I'm saying Trevor Maddich did. I'm not there yet, but I do think that they showed a lot of holes with y'all on, okay, you have to kind of weigh what does Philip Forsberg want and also how much are you committing to a competitive rebuild. But I do have to say, Jared's take on the $500,000 is so asinine that Joe has to win.
See, that's just ridiculous.
What is ridiculous? It's ridiculous to think that $500,000 is anything in the eyes of Tennessee football.
I mean, they're trying to save, like, what is it, $8 million that they don't want to pay Pruitt?
It's not about the money with Pruitt. Yes, it's about the Pruitt with Pruitt.
It is 100% about the money.
They want him out, and they would find any way to do it.
Saban spends $500,000 just on the chocolate sauce and the chocolate waterfall in the locker room.
Yeah, but see, Nick Saban actually...
Like Willy Wonka.
Nick Saban doesn't have problems selling tickets. They don't have to fire Nick Saban every 3 years and then have to pay him for another 5 years after that or whatever it is.
But $500,000 is nothing.
I'm not saying that $500,000 is the end of the world for a program like UT. I'm just saying,
that's what gets you going in this whole situation?
Do you really have to cancel a game with Army? Like, do you really have to spend $500,000 because you're afraid of Army?
See, that's where I'm at. I'm like, really? You're really afraid of Army that much? It has nothing to do with the money.
Well, I'd like to keep the $500,000.
Well, I don't think it's about keeping the money or spending the money. I think it's the principle of it all that you're going to cancel a game with Army because you're so afraid of not.
Well, then
going
why mention the price that they spent?
Because that's one of the facts.
Hey, Jared, hold that $500,000 and hold this L, buddy.
Oh, nice. Thank you. Thank you for that. I mean, I just think, like, it's ridiculous that, like, if it were free to get out of it and say play Akron instead of Army, fine. But I got to pay $500,000 to get out of it. Just play the game. That's all I got to say.
I mean, just play the game because you're not a bunch of wussies.
Yeah, but, like, I'd rather not play the game if I don't have to play the game.
Well, I mean, but you have to pay for it. So it's like, okay, just play the game.
Which is my whole point.
But it's...
That you cost me the game over is the whole point you're making right now.
No, it's not. Because I'm saying just play the game. Just play the game and don't be so embarrassing. That's an embarrassing move, honestly, by Tennessee football.
Joe Rexroad, as always, he'd sign Clowney again if he could. And
all day.
Would make that up.
He'd do it 100 times again.
I'd give Clowney $500,000. I'd sign him for $500,000.
He's worth $500,000.
Yeah, I'd say
Joe Rexroad, as always, we will battle again next Wednesday.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, Joe Rexroad joining us on the program. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Ryan Porth's all mad at me because he thinks $9 million's not even in the ballpark for Forsberg. This kid from Minnesota just signed for $9 million a year.
Yep.
Oh, don't be telling me that, like, that's not, you know, what these guys are going to want. I'm just saying. 615-737-1025. Stillman and Company were delivered by TriStar Moving. Let me tell you about Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. You know I love those guys. My friends at Hiller, there is no better time to upgrade your essential home systems than this month with Hiller. Hiller is offering you credits for your old home systems. So trade in your old HVAC unit and earn up to $1,500 in credits towards select new systems. Upgrade from a standard water heater to a tankless water heater and earn up to $500,000 with your trade-in. Trade up to a new electrical panel and earn up to $500 in credits for your old one. Their work is backed by the Happy You'll Be Your Services Free Guarantee. Their technicians are continuing to take measures to keep you and your family safe and healthy on every single call. You know I love Hiller. They take great care of my home. They can do so the same. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, proud supporters of the Predators, the Commodores, and the Volunteers. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today. Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see Zach Brown Band at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday, October 17th? Head over to YouTube and subscribe to the 1025 The Game YouTube page. You'll enter for your chance to see Zach Brown. One winner will be chosen on Monday, and that winner will be subscribed to our YouTube page where they can watch us streaming every day, brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. So we were talking yesterday about Derrick Henry and the Hall of Fame and all-time great and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yep.
And I usually think that the fans normally overvalue their own players, where we were talking about, okay, what does Derrick Henry have to do in order to make the Hall of Fame and things like that. And I went on a radio show in Louisville this morning, and I was talking about how we were discussing whether or not Derrick Henry is going to be in the Hall of Fame, and they were like, oh, yeah, Derrick Henry, definitely. And then Fitz was on, and I asked Fitz the question, the Robbie Stanley question, about is Derrick Henry an all-time great? And Fitz said, yes, that Derrick Henry is an all-time great, and that what we're watching is a Hall of Fame running back. And I guess I'm a little surprised that everybody is just jumping on board the idea, oh, yeah, Derrick Henry, what he's doing, it's all-time great stats. Maybe we're undervaluing Derrick Henry. Maybe if, you know, he has a decent season this year, 1,300 yards, and next year starts to decline, 1,000 yards or 800 yards or something like that, and then, he's out of the league in 3 years, like most running backs who take the kind of hits he takes are. Maybe he does go to the Hall of Fame based off of what he's done the last three and a third seasons.
Well, I think you have to identify the difference between a Hall of Famer and an all-time great, because everyone may have a different idea of that.
Well, let's just use Hall of Fame then for this.
I think he's in the Hall of Fame.
Right now?
Yeah. I think if you join an elite group of players, how many players have run have rushed for 2,000-plus yards in a season? Seven?
Yeah, but some of those guys aren't in the Hall of Fame.
I think they should be.
You think Jamal Lewis is a Hall of Famer?
Well, I think that if you rush for 2,000 yards in a season, yes. I do think that Derrick Henry belongs in the Hall of Fame right now, especially if he does another one of those things, whether it's rushing for 2,000 yards in a consecutive season, rushing for 1,500 yards with 15 touchdowns, the things that we highlighted yesterday, things that would put him in an even more elite group. I think that it solidifies it, but I think at this point, yes, I do think Derrick Henry already is a Hall of Fame running back, but to be considered an all-time great, not just a Hall of Famer,
I want to stay on the Hall of Fame discussion, though. Edgerrin James, who I do not believe belongs in the Hall of Fame, has 12,000 yards in his career.
Okay.
Derrick Henry has 6. So you're putting Derrick Henry in with half the amount of rushing yards of a guy that we think is a fringe Hall of Famer at that. And remember you have to stay out for 5 years.
Yeah.
So everything that you did right now, you know, you're not as good 5 years from now as you were when you retired, unless you are just a superstar. And so I hear you. Like, Eric Dickerson has all the stats, the longevity kind of stats, the 2,000-yard seasons, he's got all that. Adrian Peterson has all that. Chris Johnson has 2,000 yards. He's not a Hall of Famer. We all know Chris Johnson's not. So that's where I have a hard time of, if Derrick Henry walks off today, he's for sure a Hall of Famer. And he also doesn't have the playoff success, and he also doesn't play in the market.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any chance Derrick Henry makes the Hall of Fame if his career were to be over today.
So we were having the Hall of Famer all-time great discussion yesterday. Do you think a consecutive 2,000-yard season, 1,500 rushing yards, 15 touchdowns, a Super Bowl win, that's what gets him in the Hall of Fame, and then we'll go all-time great from there?
Well, Jamal Lewis has the Super Bowl. So if it's like, okay, if Derek gets the Super Bowl, then is Derek in? The difference, though,
I would say, yeah.
Everybody looks at that Ravens team and they think about Ray Lewis and that great defense. If the Titans win the Super Bowl, it'll be because of Derek.
Mm-hmm.
Terrell Davis has 7,600 yards, but he's got 2 Super Bowls. So, yes, if Derrick Henry were to get your 1,500 yards, then you could make the argument that he's got the same 4-year span that Terrell Davis had, but he doesn't have the Super Bowl, which is why the second 2,000-yard season, I think, becomes important. Now, are they going to hold it against Derek that it was a 17-game season, and that unlike 7 years from now, when everybody's doing everything in 17-game seasons, this will be the first 17-game season. So 5 years from now, when they're in the room debating it, they'll say, "But remember, you know, that was 17 games, and now 6 people have rushed for 2,000 yards since we've allowed the 17th game."
See, that's what's going to be tough. And I think that's what, you know, adding the 17th game, I think that was one thing that people brought up was, okay, in this new era of the NFL, what do stats look like? How do we hold it up against, you know, Hall of Famers? How do we hold it up against history? But I mean, this isn't the first time the NFL has changed. So that is going to be one element of it. I think that you also have to take into account, you know, just impact. Can Derrick Henry carry a team? Can Derrick Henry win a Super Bowl with him at the helm of this offense? I think that's something that you also have to take into consideration.
But when somebody's career is over...
Could Edgerrin James have done that without Peyton Manning?
But when someone's career is over, you know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
So the idea of like, well, could Derrick do it? Well, when his career is over and they're discussing it in Canton, like,
but
you already know the
answer. Now that we're discussing it pre-Derrick's career
being right now, the answer is no. That's the biggest knock on the Titans, is that, well, they're led by the running back. So there you go. 615-737-1025. Carolines is next. Stillman & Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, tell us about Southeastern Carolines, Caroline.
Southeastern Carolines, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. You can come hang out with me on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. I'll preview the SEC football slate with my Southeastern Carolines. I'll give you my picks of the day, get you set before kickoff around the South. Southeastern Carolines is presented by 312 Pizza Company. I'm looking forward to my Tigers taking the road in Starkville this
weekend. There you go. It's time now for Carolines. Jeff Hem is sitting in the on-deck circle as we are here hanging out at First Ride in Park, final homestand of the season. But first, time for Carolines.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Carolines. here on Stillman and Company
on ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Carolines is brought to you by BetUS, America's favorite sports book for over 25 years. You can sign up at BetUS.com, mention game, and get a sign-up bonus on your first deposit. First and foremost, how about those Cardinals on a 10-game win streak?
Unbelievable.
Taking the Cardinals again tonight, plus 112 against the Brewers.
I'm going to take the Brewers. I'm here at First Horizon Park.
All right.
They got a lot of Nashville sounds on that team. I'm going to go ahead and take the Brewers.
I'm going to rock with the Red Hot team. I made that mistake last night, taking the Cardinals plus 1.5. We've also got Giants-Padres. Give me the Giants on the money line, minus 135. They got Scott Kazmir on the mound, who is 0-1 with a 6-4-3 in three appearances. He was on the team in Tokyo, silver medal winning team in Tokyo.
Think about this with Scott Kazmir. You were 5 years old when he was like the hottest prospect in baseball that got traded in a terrible deal by the Mets, and he's still pitching now.
That is longevity. And you know what? And I believe in that.
I'll take the Giants because they're just, the Padres are totally scuffling right now. And I just, quite frankly, just, you know, the Giants are playing great baseball. Watch them over the weekend.
Braves, Diamondbacks tonight as well. Your team. I'm going to take the Braves on the money line, minus 160. Yeah. Jesse Chavez on the mound, 3-2, 2.67 ERA. This is only his second start of the season, but he's given up only one run over around nine innings across his last nine outings. Diamondbacks, Luke Weaver on the mound, 3-5 with a 4.42 ERA. So he has allowed six earned runs over his last nine innings in his first two starts.
He pitched yesterday, but I'll still take the Braves today.
Did he pitch yesterday?
Yeah, Austin Riley hit a home run off a changeup to left field. It was beautiful. Tell us about BetUS.
But the Diamondbacks are just bad, so I'm taking the Braves.
Terrible.
Carolines is brought to you by BetUS, America's favorite sports book for over 25 years. You can sign up at BetUS.com, mention game, and get a sign-up bonus on your first deposit.
All right, those are Carolines. Meanwhile, we're hanging out at First Horizon Park, where a big baseball game tonight, the Nashville Sounds taking on the Columbus Clippers. It feels like just yesterday, Jeff Hem, the voice of the Nashville Sounds, that we were over at Third and Home celebrating the return of minor league baseball after a pandemic erased the 2020 season. And we were wondering, hey, how's this season going to go? Are we going to get through it? And here we are at the final homestand. And Jeff, I got to tell you, I think that this Sound season has been an unmitigated success, given how worried we were at the start. Thanks for joining us. And it feels like it just flew by so fast.
Yeah, great to be with you guys. Thank you, as always, for having me. And I'm with you on all counts. It has flown by. It's been a great year. The Sounds entering tonight, still leading all minor league baseball in total and per-game attendance. And you think of all the times the target kept moving on our fans throughout 2020, early 2021. We start late, reduced capacity the first few games, and then opened it up full. We've had, knock on wood, no interruptions to this point and no reductions in the amount of fans we can have here. And people have shown time and again how much they love all the different components of what goes on in and around this ballpark. It's been a great season. The team on the field has been really good. It included a 15-game winning streak early. As you know, at AAA, the names are going to change as you go along. So some of the names are quite different here late in the season, but the team is still well above 500 going into these final 10 games. So I'm with you. I don't know what part of it wouldn't be a success this year on or off the field, and it's great to be able to say that.
I got to tell you something, Jeff. I love playing minor league baseball in September. Like, I know that normally you want to have, the way it's always been, is that Labor Day is kind of the end of the season. But I kind of like it. Like, I mean, I'm a big proponent. You've seen me at the ballpark a bunch this year. Like, I like having minor league baseball in September. The new rules on the expanded rosters for the major leagues makes it a lot easier to have a AAA season in September. I really like it.
Yeah, I just think aerial view for fans, it's going to take some getting used to over these next few years of, oh, so you're not done at Labor Day. Because like you said, it had been that way for so long that unless you were postseason bound at the AAA level or any minor league level, You were done on Labor Day, and so it's sort of like raising up your hand like, no, we're still going. And even next year, we already know the 2022 schedule is going to end the regular season right around this mid-September point, and then there will, we expect anyway, be a more normalized postseason that could have somebody going into October 1st territory. So it's going to be like this in future years, and I think as fans get used to it, I agree with you. I think they'll like it. I think from the team standpoint, every Monday is going to continue to be an off day next year, so that the volume of games will be similar to what it always used to be. It'll just be spread out longer over the calendar because you'll have an off day every week instead of previous years where the team would grind, you know, 21 games in 22 days and things like that. So I think it's better for everybody. It's just going to take some getting used to for the fans who kind of got programmed to think that we always wrapped up over Labor Day.
You know, Jeff Hems with us, the voice of the sounds. One thing that I think is crazy, I've always said ever since First Horizon Park opened, and I go all the way back to as a kid going to Greer Stadium, and it definitely hit home today. Chase McCabe was talking about, you know, his father who had passed away and how his first baseball game was a Sounds game at Greer. And I think it's so great, all the activities that are here at First Horizon Park that we always talk about, whether it's, you know, the band box out in right field, whether it's the, you know, kind of the kids area where there's so many games to play. But I mean, you and I were talking before the show today about Rick Sweet, the manager of the Sounds, and this roster. I mean, it's a fun group to watch. And from what you were telling me, and I know Rick Sweet very, very little from when I was in Louisville, but it seems like a good group of guys that has made this season even more enjoyable for fans.
It is. And I think, you know, one component that didn't kind of come all the way back here in 2021 that I think will be great to have back, we presume, for 2022 is how involved our players want to be and get to be in the community over the course of a season. And I think that fan interaction has still been missing. You know, guys can still sign autographs and do little things after the game kind of on their own, but we have not been able, from a protocol standpoint this year, to have the normal fan engagement with players. That is part of what makes any season so much fun, how close you can get to the players. You can interact, and our guys would normally, in usual circumstances, be making hospital visits and playing pop-up baseball games at different schools around town. So that's the one component that will further make people feel what you just mentioned in future years, even more engaged to the team and more connected to the team. I don't think it's not been non-existent, but I think it'll be amplified again next year, we would think, in the ways that people were always used to, pregame autograph sessions and getting to interact with the players and getting to just be around them literally more than what people got this year. So that version will only help people get to know future teams. And in this case, the Brewers being our AAA affiliate again, our parent club again for a long time now, that familiarity is only going to grow in future years when fans literally are allowed in more cases to be around the team.
It is Fan Appreciation Week here at First Horizon Park. You can enjoy $5 and $6 beers all week long. Grab tickets today, soundsbaseball.com. First pitch tonight, 7:05. So with $5 and $6 beers, I think we just go downstairs and rack them up on Jeff Hems' tab. How about that?
Yeah, put it on Jeff's.
There you go. Right there. We're just going to go down there and say, put it on Jeff's tab.
You will quickly realize what little clout I might have, but give it a try and let me know how it goes.
Sounds good. Jeff, we will see you in less than an hour. You'll be on the call right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll actually see you in about 20 seconds. But we appreciate you as always. Big game tonight. Sounds in Columbus again. Fan Appreciation Week. That's it for us. We're out of here. Nashville Soccer Club tonight on 94.9 ESPN Radio. Coming up next, to bridge you from us to the Sounds, Stillman & Company. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.